He always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, whose show is this?
I like that Lakers fans who also root for the Dodgers probably effing hate the Giants and the Warriors and maybe, you know, the San Jose Sharks as well. I hate the Bay. I just cannot stand the Bay. I love going there. I love eating there. I love the wine from that region of the country is really good too. I love all that stuff, but I hate all of those teams and all of their fans. And that is something that I think if they were to tweak the schedule to this degree, I think you would lose out on that stuff. So rather than do that, to me, what I would rather do is have some teams that you just don't play every year. And I know the NBA will never do that because the Lakers going to Orlando really helps the Magic financially. The Lakers going to Atlanta really helps the Hawks financially. The Lakers going to all of these markets really helps. It's a bit of a shot in the arm for all of these markets. And, as such, the NBA would never, like those owners would never vote for a system where they don't get the Lakers at home one time a year because that's one of their big earning nights of every season. But to me, I would, if it didn't require ownership voting and if those owners acted in a way that was, prioritized the health of the league over the health of their own, the financial health of their own team, I would prefer that you play your division rivals four times and you cut down on the non-division teams. You cut those non-division games in half, basically. And you don't see all of those opponents every single year. Now, if you want to get kind of cute, you could basically say, hey, there's if our biggest rival or one of our biggest rivals is not in the Lakers division, then we have like a rivalry game every year. Then I'm fine with the Lakers playing the Celtics twice every year, just for the sake of maintaining that rivalry. But outside of that, I think division rivalries are a good thing. I think, having some of those teams that you play a bunch of times over the course of the season is really kind of important. And it makes it so that those games that you play against them, especially later in the year, it makes them feel more important. So I would say, cut the season from 82 down to like 64, eliminate some of those non-divisional games that you play over the course of the season, just for the sake of facing everybody once or twice. Because like the other part of it too, the argument for playing everybody at least once or twice is so that, you have a big enough sample size and you can better identify teams at the end of the season based on how they look against every team in the league. But you never play every single team in the league fully healthy, and you never play like the teams that you face are never going to be fully healthy basically by the time you play them. So it doesn't really, the sample size argument doesn't really weigh out to me. So I would cut some of those non-division games. You would, identify a rival in your schedule and you play that team once or twice a year. And outside of that, you have your rival game, you have your division rival, your divisional games. And you build out the schedule from there as far as like who you play or don't play every season. And then it makes it that much more important. Like I know for me, my Vikings, I live obviously here in Austin. My Vikings are finally going to Dallas this upcoming December. I can't wait to go see them, and it's going to be that much more of an event when the Vikings and the Cowboys get together. That's going to be really fun, and I think it adds to the novelty when these teams do actually face each other if you don't actually play them every year for the sake of playing them every year. Let's see the next question here. Let's see if we have any from the... Let's see. Yeah. All right. So no, we don't have any extras from the comments. So Frank Galden with an interesting question here. I think Lakers media slash podcast in their show of respect to Chick Hearn stay away from repeating or replaying his legendary catchphrases. I bet fans under 30 don't know putting the game in the refrigerator. Shouldn't more be done so his legendary catchphrases can be remembered? This is interesting. It is definitely a balance, right? Because you don't want to, you don't want like, so I actually interviewed John Ireland way back in the day, pretty early on in my Locked On Lakers hosting duties. I interviewed John about that and kind of picked his brain as far as like, hey, what, how did you balance having your own voice while also respecting Chick Hearn? And he said that, you know, he debated keeping the refrigerator and bringing it back even after he took over for Chick. And he does, like, you know, everybody uses slam dunk. Like we know what that sounds like. And there are some like dribble drive and mustard off the hot dog and stuff like that. Like there are some that like are just part of the NBA lexicon. But there are some like refrigerator, which would be a direct, you know, homage to Chick. And I think that like it was a really cool moment in the World Series where when Freddie Freeman hit his homer, his walk-off grand slam, right? And I thought Joe Davis did an incredible job of weaving in Vin Scully's old call, but also staying true to himself and making that moment his own too. And I think that's kind of what these broadcasters have to do. As far as podcasters go, like I don't really know what we would do here, right? Like I guess I could technically in recaps, let me know what you guys think about this. But I guess one thing I could do is say, what was the refrigerator moment? You know, at what point was the game put into the refrigerator? I guess I could do that. There's not much that podcasters can do here. I guess if we do like the playback, right, which I think I'm going to do more of this year, if I'm on playback and there's a moment where it looks like the game is put in the refrigerator, maybe I could weave that in every so often in those obvious moments where it's clear the game is done. One of my favorite moments ever was the Lakers played against the Kings, and I think jumped out to I think they scored 20 something unanswered points at in the first quarter, and Chick put the game in the refrigerator in the first quarter. Like I think if I was to do it, I would do something like that because you know I just loved Chick Hearn's sense of humor. And I think that's, you know, the best way that I could kind of honor him is would be to maintain some of that sense of humor as well. But yeah, I don't blame broadcasters for like, because if you do that and you do it poorly, there are a few ways that your audience will turn against you than if you try to sound like Chick Hearn and it just comes across as a shitty impersonation. Like that is the one thing that you just flat out cannot do. If you're going to try to honor Chick, you'd better do so tastefully and you better execute it perfectly. And if you don't do those two things, if it isn't tasteful and perfect and really good, then it's going to feel cheap. And you do not want to cheapen out. You don't want to do anything that cheapens what Chick Hearn, you know, how much he matters to Lakers fans, how much Vin Scully mattered to Dodgers fans. Like those are the things that like you gotta be very, very careful with. And if you do it and it sounds good, then that moment that Joe Davis had calling that World Series game last October, It echoes into history, and it echoes in perpetuity perfectly. But if you don't execute that very well, it's going to sound cringe, and your audience is going to, you're going to lose a big chunk of your audience. So I could kind of see why a lot of broadcasters would kind of stay away from it, because they don't want to lose a chunk of the audience. All right, the next one here comes from Powell Reitel, who writes, in the spirit of the Luka transformation, do you also change your food / sporting habits when Austin and September roll in, for better or worse? So in the summer, my diet goes to shit because we go home and I eat all of like the fast food that I loved, and all of like the heaviest meals. When I go home and I'm in Southern California, I eat all of the heaviest meals that I really, really miss to this day. And that's not great for my diet. I just, like I said, got back from New Orleans and had a whole bunch of like heavy and creamy seafood and super rich, like beignets, right? Was another thing. Like that's not very good for the old diet. So I actually gained weight over the course of the summer. It helps that like in the summer and in the spring, I have to mow the lawn. So that's like some kind of built-in cardio. It's a bit like we have, I would say, just under about like a half acre around the house, and it's really hilly. So like it is a legitimate workout that I do once or twice a week or whatever. But still, at the end of the day, that is not offset the type of food that I eat in the summer. So by the time, you know, the summer starts wrapping up, we start cooking more, we take fewer trips, and we start, you know, kind of managing our diet. And that late part of the summer, the early part of the fall, I think that's probably the healthiest I eat. But the problem is we get into late fall and early winter when it starts cooling down, and you start cooking more stews, you start cooking more pot roast is one of like the best things that Jen and I cook, a lot of ramen with heavier broth and all that stuff. So yeah, I would say like the more that Jen and I cook, the healthier that we are. But if we you know, the depending on the time of year, the caliber of food that we start cooking for ourselves, that kind of changes. So the big thing for me is just finding ways to stay active in those colder months, and that kind of helps. Now, sporting habits, look, like I can't wait for, like I have a fantasy football draft here in about 50 minutes. I did one on Saturday, yesterday. I can't wait for football to be back. I can't wait to enter the baseball playoffs. I can't wait for hockey to be back. I can't wait for basketball to be back. Like I am legitimately one of the bigger sports fans that you will ever find. I don't just cover the Lakers for the sake of my career. I would follow them this closely, whether people subscribe to the channel or not. We live right down the street from an arena where they play the Austin Spurs play the Spurs G League affiliate. We take the kids to go see those games pretty often. The Texas Stars, right, I think is what they are. They play at the HEB Center, which is just down the street from us too. That's a minor league hockey games that we take the kids to. We just love sports in the Irwin household. And so in that sense, like as far as like my sporting habits go, it just goes from I get to enjoy video games and movies and TV in the summer. And then once the fall rolls around, all of my spare time is dedicated to, you know, fantasy football, where, you know, big swings of money are kind of on the line, depending on how my seasons go. You know, we take the kids to all those games that I mentioned. It like my priorities really kind of swing. And then obviously, you know, doing this, you know, I have to try to keep up with all of the other really, really excellent shows out there. You guys would tell if I haven't been paying attention or watching the Lakers. You would know. You guys would respond in the way that you should if you felt like I was cheapening out on the show. So I have to dedicate a whole bunch of time to being as knowledgeable about the Lakers as I possibly can. So that also is a habitual change. But yeah, in the summer, it is kind of nice to turn the sports brain off, watch more movies, watch more TV, catch up on TV that I missed, you know, if I wasn't able to get around to some stuff, play a lot more video games and stuff, do some travel, eat some different food, and then zero right back in at the onset of the fall. Next question here comes from Gregory Brown. He has two of them. So, Anthony, do you think the Lakers should trade Reeves, say a 3-and-D type player like Herb Jones and Yves Mesi? And then another question, do you see Luka keeping the weight off all season, or will he gain his weight back? So this is a conversation I just had with Kirk Henderson, I think last week. And, this is really kind of weird. Most NBA players, or not most, but a lot of NBA players will come into the season maybe a little bit heavier, knowing that the amount of basketball that they're going to play will make it so that they will get into shape over the course of the season. And you'll do that early in your career when your metabolism is in a place where you can do that kind of a thing. And then later in guys' careers, if they want to stick around a little bit longer or be more productive later into their career, then they'll come into the season a little bit better in shape. And then also, shaping up over the course of the season. What's really kind of weird about Luka is that his metabolism isn't where it obviously needed to be. So he will actually gain some weight over the course of the NBA season. Dallas Mavericks fans are very quick to point that out. I mean, part of that is the diet. I think part of that is habits and stuff like that. The metabolism slows down as you get later in life. And I think where Luka is right now is, he's coming to grips with the reality that if he wants to be more productive, he has to take his diet more seriously, his conditioning more seriously. And we'll see what that looks like. But I don't know. I don't know enough about Luka to be pessimistic on this front. So I'm going to choose to be optimistic and say that the way that Luka is talking about his professionalism in this sense and on this matter would indicate that I think he understands that he needs to make very real changes, and I think he has. So I do think he can and will keep this weight off. I think he wants to win MVP this season. Is the sense I'm kind of getting there. So we'll see what that looks like. Then the second question there is another Reeves question. And this is weird. Johnny writes, Reeves is popular, but he isn't a winning player. Johnny, again, I just want Reeves gone already. So this is a weird thing that sports fans do where it's like, I just want so-and-so gone. And that so-and-so is like a good player. I've noticed that with LeBron over this season too, where it's like, I just want LeBron gone. What? And most of these guys or a lot of these guys that sports fans say, like, I just want so-and-so gone. Those are guys that teams on other, or fans of other teams would be like, well, I'll take LeBron, I'll take Reeves. And it's like a weird, this is a kind of funny phenomenon with sports fans where we are so impacted by results that it kind of blinds us to what would entail just losing some of these guys would actually like do for the team. If the Lakers trade Austin Reeves, now I think Herb Jones would be a good guy for the Lakers to trade Reeves for. This is like, to go back to what we were talking about before, the Lakers so far this summer, right? If the concept of trading Reeves came up, they were basically only having those conversations for current or future all-stars. And Herb Jones isn't necessarily an all-star, but he's certainly like a star in his role. And I think that's something that the Lakers would have to take more seriously, is open up, like broaden that search to not just, you know, stars in the sense of guys who play in all-star games, but stars in their role, and see if maybe that player that they acquire, even while that player may not be as talented in the specific ways that Austin is talented, maybe, you know, because of their talent in other facets of the game that aren't as loud as on-ball creativity for Austin or others. Like that's the thing with Austin, is that like he is really good in some very loud ways, right? He's a solid scorer. He's a good passer. He is kind of a playmaker defensively, where he takes charges and he has active hands and stuff like that. So like he does a lot of these things that fans notice. And look, I'm not going to beat around the bush here. The fact that Austin Reeves is white makes him more popular and makes him a greater business and investment to whatever team he's on. And that's why I mentioned Tim Harris and the business ops parts of the Lakers, is, you know, they know that if they trade Austin, or if Austin just leaves, that they would suffer a little bit financially. That's just how it kind of goes. It's kind of awkward to talk about, but that's the reality of the situation. So with Austin being all of those things, that's why the Lakers have a very kind of narrow view of the type of player that they would trade Austin for. But it does, like, you know, we do have to at some point have a conversation. If Austin and Luka don't appear to be the pairing of the future, we do have to have a very real conversation of, well, does it make sense to bring in somebody who is much better at the little things that you need around Luka than maybe Austin might be? Even if that means taking a step back in terms of the on-ball creativity that Austin provides. And that's where that conversation gets kind of tricky and nuanced and all of those things. So like, you know, this is an interesting one. T-Money, Reeves can't be the third best player on a contender. Yeah, he can. If your first and second players are Luka and Giannis, I would probably say if Austin is your third best player, I would probably say, yeah, he can be the third best player on that championship team. Now, can he be the second best player on a championship team? I don't know. I would probably say not, because and that's where, if he's your second best player and he's making $35 million a year plus, you know, that, what does that mean for your cap? And those are conversations. Again, I am open to all of those conversations. The Lakers, I'm saying, have to be more open to some of those conversations than they have to, than they have been to this point. But yeah, like, you know, if the season starts and Austin and Luka are both getting picked on defensively, and that is really hurting the Lakers, then yeah, we do have to have some more real conversations about that pairing of Luka and Austin than I think the Lakers have had to this point. All right, last question here comes from @SamMaurice24. Fave food spots you always have to hit up in New Orleans. So I've only been twice. I've been to New Orleans two times in my life. And so I can't say like there are spots that I have always hit up. Now there are things that I always look for when I'm in New Orleans. Now this is funny. This is the first year that I've been to New Orleans in a month that doesn't end in R. And the reason that that matters, I don't know how many of you guys like oysters. I love raw oysters. I just put a little bit of lemon on it, a little bit of salt, and I throw them back. And I could eat stupid amounts of oysters. And I was looking forward to getting some oysters this year. Well, my father-in-law, he's done a lot more traveling in his lifetime than I have, even to this point in my life. He was in the Marines, that a lot of traveling with that. You know, he's originally from the Midwest and moving out here, right? He spent a lot of time traveling with that. And I was saying, like, yeah, I would like to go find an oyster bar. He was like, don't do that. It is not a month that ends in R. If you're going to eat oysters in New Orleans, it has to be a month that ends in R. And I was like, I've never heard this before. Okay. So I went to this, we went and ate last night at a seafood restaurant, and it had an oyster bar there. So there was a dude there shucking oysters. And I asked him, I was like, hey, my father-in-law told me about this rule about months that end in R with oysters. And he goes, yep, your father-in-law knows. And I was like, oh shit. So you don't eat oysters unless it's a month that ends in R. He goes, absolutely not. None of us here do. It is a big no-no. And I was like, oh shit. Well, I guess I got to come back in a couple of weeks. And he goes, no, it's that hyper specific. So I'm going to go back and I'm going to eat some oysters, hopefully in the next few months or so. Maybe I'll go catch, like, when the Lakers go play in New Orleans, maybe that'll be my excuse to go in and go back to New Orleans. But so that's like one of the things is I always like try to go there and eat oysters. I love crawfish etouffee. That's one of my favorites. Love me some gumbo, some jambalaya, like all that stuff is really good. My favorite dish from this year, we went to Grand Isles, I believe is what the restaurant was called. And they had, it was an off menu special, but it was a white fish and it was coated in this like blackened Cajun sauce. It had crawfish, you know, kind of scattered around it. It sat on top of essentially it's like a mashed potato pancake where you make mashed potatoes and then you flash fry it. And it gives it this coating, and that was sitting on top of a bed of spinach. Excellent, excellent. Best meal I have ever had there. And that was, again, at the Grand Isle. So check out that food. And then, yeah, like I went to Cafe Beignet yesterday morning, had a mimosa, listened to some jazz, ate some beignets. It's kind of tough to do much better than that anywhere in the country. I'm not kidding. New Orleans is my favorite American city. And if you ever get an opportunity to go, you got to. It's the only, I think, American city that has its own culture onto itself. That doesn't mean that like there are maybe more diverse cities. There are obviously bigger cities. There might even be some cities with like a greater taste in aggregate of food. But that said, It's like New Orleans is the only city I've ever been to where everybody there gets the assignment. We are from New Orleans and we, you know, there's like the hospitality in New Orleans is second to none. Best people in on the planet. Nicest people that I've ever encountered. Every single person there is just happy to have you there. Love New Orleans. You guys got to go. All right. That is, I believe, going to do it. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Please hit that subscribe button. Please hit that like button. And then we have a fun, busy week. So Harrison is going to be on the show tomorrow. I got Kobe Price, I believe, coming on the show on Tuesday. It's been way too long since I had him on the show. I want to talk to him about his first full season covering the Lakers. Going to have Jovan on at some point. The Kamenetsky brothers want to do a crossover episode. So you guys, I'll keep you guys posted on that as well. Busy, busy time here. Only a matter of like 40 days until Lakers basketball is back. So we're going to keep this train rolling. I'm still doing this player preview thing. I'm going to try to knock out at least one of those previews every day for the next couple of weeks. We have the contender series, which I have to get to as well. Hit that subscribe button, man. And if you don't, you're going to be missing out. Have a great rest of your weekend. Make somebody else's, and I will talk to you tomorrow.